We're back in session on the 1:30 panel, and with a change. This is Justice Sue Walker and Justice Robert McCoy. Bob McCoy, excuse me. And we're glad to have you here this afternoon.
Going back in time there, Justice.
Yeah. We will, if the lawyers are ready, proceed with the second case on the docket, Main Street Schools. I'll ask Bonnie to call the case.
The court will now call Main Street Schools, LLC, DBA, Sponsorate, Country Day School, and Wednesday, versus Jason and Lori Emerald. Veterans Court, Mr. Michael Riddick will argue for the appellant. Mr. Michael Hackett will argue for the appellant.
Okay. Mr. Ricketts, is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Are you ready? Come forward and proceed.
May it please the court. Are parties entitled to rely upon freely bargained agreements? And if not, are they at least entitled for a trial court to render a judgment based upon the case that was tried? My name is Mike Ricketts, and I represent appellants William J. Vesterman and Montessori Country Day Schools for the Texas Lawyers for Texas Veterans Program. I will refer to appellants as Country Day School for purposes of these proceedings. The overarching issues before this panel are, one, whether a trial court can unilaterally decide to rescind a valid and unbreached contract if the court believes that it can unilaterally fashion a more equitable outcome than what the parties agreed to when they entered into the contract. Second issue is whether a court can unilaterally decide to rescind a valid and unbreached contract after a bench trial in which the trial court, the only claim that was being tried was for breach of contract, and the trial court concluded that there was no breach of contract. This case is not a complicated one. Appellees, the Bimmerleys, paid a non-refundable deposit to secure a spot at Country Day School for their minor son for the school year 2011-2012. This is the same deposit, varying in amounts, that they paid in 2008 to 2009, 2009 to 2010, and the 2010 to 2011 school terms. It was a freely bargained agreement. The parties were happy. It was acceptable terms up until 2011. At that time, they had paid a non-refundable deposit for their son to go to school for the 2011-2012 school year. But after they had paid that deposit, they decided not to send their child to Country Day School. That made the bargain that they had freely admitted to, agreed to, that made it an unhappy bargain. Then the contract that they had been happy with for the first 3 years, then it wasn't fair. Then that non-refundable deposit needed to be refundable. And in fact, it needed to be refunded. Now, oftentimes when parties enter into contracts, circumstances can change where the outcomes are not necessarily what people envision. However, it is important to note that the Bimmerleys in this case made the affirmative decision not to send their son to the school after they had paid the non-refundable deposit. So when don't we hold parties to their contracts? Oftentimes, we will not hold parties to the freely bargained agreements in a situation where the contract suffers from some deficiency. It may have been marred by fraud or fraudulent inducement, or in situations where there's a breach of contract. Certainly in this case, where the remedy rewarded was an equitable remedy, in cases where there is no adequate remedy at law. None of those things happened here. None of those things were pleaded, alleged during the case, tried during the case. The only claim that was tried in this case was for breach of contract, which on the record at pages 19 to 22, it was clear to the parties and it was clear to the trial court that that was the claim that was being tried. And there was never any evidence of fraud or mistake or any of the other reasons that would suggest that rescission was an appropriate remedy under the circumstances. So if I might start with the second point of error, which is presented by the appellants, because it's a pure question of law. And that question is whether trial court can award a remedy without the plaintiff first establishing a claim or a cause of action that would entitle it to that remedy, in this case, rescission. The appellant did not plead or prove fraud or mutual mistake or any of the usual elements that go along with rescission as a remedy. And if I can just quote the Fain Family First Limited case that this court issued last year. It's a consistent statement of the law, which is rescission is an equitable remedy to set aside an otherwise legal contract for fraud, mistake, or other reasons, and is generally used when monetary damages would be inadequate. And then just to quote the Kennebrew v. Harris case that came out just March this year, which is directly on point with this particular issue, because rescission is a remedy, it is available only if the other party to the contract has committed some wrong. And skipping down, thus for rescission to be appropriate, the party requesting it must first prevail on a claim for which rescission is an available remedy. And in this case, that did not happen. The court did not find breach of contract. That was the only claim that was argued during the case. And certainly what happens here, or what the Bimmerleys hope was happened, was the court would apply a legal doctrine to allow them to escape from the obligations that they had agreed to in their contract. Certainly with respect to an inadequate remedy at law in these types of situations, that was never pleaded, it was never proven. In fact, what the award that the Bimmerleys received was damages. That is the award that they intend to try to have this panel affirm at this time. There was never any allegations, nor can one necessarily conceive of what the inadequate remedy at law evidence might be. Which leads us to the third point of error, which is whether it was an abuse of discretion for the trial court to rescind a valid and unbreached contract and then award damages based upon an unjust enrichment theory that had never been pleaded, had never been tried, and in fact, the terms rescission and unjust enrichment were never even uttered until the trial court issues its judgment at the close of the case. Unjust enrichment is a quasi-contract claim. It's a quasi-contract claim because there is no contract. In this case, there is no dispute that there was a contract that was not breached. That contract, the terms of which that govern, are on Defendant's Exhibit 1. And Country Day School was put in a position, because unjust enrichment is not available under Texas law, when there is an express agreement, an express written contract to that effect, there was never any reason to defend itself against an unjust enrichment claim that had never been pleaded, and certainly wasn't being tried after the trial court made it clear that breach of contract was the only claim at issue. Certainly with respect to rescission, Country Day School was never in a position where it thought it needed to defend. It was never on notice it needed to defend against rescission, because the only claims that would sustain such an award would be fraud or mistake or breach of contract, and at the end of the plaintiff's case, there was never a scintilla of evidence to suggest breach of contract.
Well, isn't, in effect, rescission what the plaintiffs sought by seeking refund of the fees?
Rescission
tuition?
Is
tuition?
Yes, Your Honor. Rescission, I want the word, the terminology, when you talk about rescission, it is a legal remedy. When you enter a contract, I try to rescind that contract. You know what? You do not get to rescind that contract. Contracts are legally binding. When we talk about rescission, we are talking about a legal remedy, and that particular legal remedy has basis for which it can be applied. You cannot just rescind a contract. A court has to say that that contract is rescinded, and in order to be entitled to that remedy, the plaintiff must prove fraud, mistake, breach of contract, inadequate remedy at law, and none of those things happened in this case.
Okay.
Did I answer your question?
Yes.
For the third point of error, again, with respect to the abuse of discretion, if you get past the point where there was never a claim proven that would substantiate or that would entitle the plaintiff to the remedy, Country Day School was not entitled, it wasn't aware that it was defending against these claims during the case once the court made it clear that it was a breach of contract. Had this been a jury trial, what would have gone up to the jury was, did they breach the contract? If yes, award damages. What the jury would not have done is go back and staple an extra piece of paper back there, say, we're going to rescind the contract under an equitable remedy, and then under an unjust enrichment theory, we're going to award half of the non-refundable deposit back to the plaintiff. That is not what would have happened, and then frankly, that is not what should have happened in this case.
What about the requirement of special exceptions, because they never really pleaded breach of contract? It didn't appear to me when I reviewed the pleadings.
We objected at trial. We did not see a breach of contract claim there at all. And with respect to cause of action pleading, the deficiencies in this particular pleading were multiple, and it was unclear, which is why what led to the bench conference What are we trying here? Because we do not see any claims in this particular pleading, other than this is not fair and we don't like the outcome, which is not a legally sufficient pleading. However, I'm not sure that the appellants had legal counsel at the time to file a special exceptions. It did not. And that's what the equivalent of what the special exceptions hearing was for our position that happened at the record 19 to 22.
Sort of goes short of what you're saying is rescission is not a cause of action, it's a remedy, and it's a remedy for a cause of action that was not proven.
Absolutely.
That's the short, long and short of your pitch.
That is long and short of the de novo question of law on that, certainly the second point of error. The third point of error, we would say it's an unreasonable arbitrary. If you got to the point where rescission was available to be awarded, it was not a remedy that, it was a remedy that was awarded unreasonably, without notice. The appellants were arguing a case and had no idea that these claims were at issue because it was clear from the conference from the court that breach of contract was the only claim. And when the appellees failed to present a scintilla of evidence in support of the breach of contract claim, the appellants, at the close of plaintiff's case, moved for a motion for judgment, and that motion should have been granted. You know how we know that? Because after the appellants decided not to put on any evidence at all, the court came to the same conclusion. There was no breach of contract. Ergo, that decision should have been made at the first time when, at the close of plaintiff's case, when the motion for judgment was made. And at that point, those claims should have been dismissed with prejudice, and we would not be here today.
But what about the court's finding of fact number 5, where it says that the school has policies and conditions it contends applied to plaintiff's tuition advance. Those policies and conditions include the following: no adjustment or refund of fees or tuition, including the May advance tuition and enrollment material fees, will be made if a child is withdrawn from the school by the parent for any reason before the end of the period for which he has been enrolled.
And that is directly out of the agreement, Defense Exhibit 1, that's paragraph 9. And with respect to that, I guess I don't understand your question. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Well, my question is that the provision that you are relying on for saying that there is no right to a refund?
No, it'd be paragraph 8 of that contract, Your Honor.
Okay. So my point is then, it looks like reading this, and maybe I'm reading it wrong, but that they are entitled to a refund for the period that, if they've been withdrawn before the period that they paid for, before the end of the period that they've paid for. Is that, am I just misreading it?
I have a similar question that he, as I understood one of their arguments, he had not yet been enrolled for the school year for which they had paid the advance May tuition.
That's correct.
So if he had not yet been enrolled when they made the decision to withdraw him from school, then that paragraph would not apply.
And that's correct. And if you read that paragraph 9, it says no adjustment or refund will be made. And I think if you read that in conjunction with paragraph 8, it's clear it's a non-refundable deposit is what's been made.
Well, yeah.
I'm sort of reading it the reverse.
Okay. Me too.
That it says in the negative, no adjustment or refund of fees or tuition will be made if a child is withdrawn.
It's a different set of circumstances, but it's the same. It comes to the same result, no refund. It's just a more explanatory situation that's maybe not as exact or precise as paragraph 8, but certainly it leads to the same conclusion that no refund of the non-refundable deposit will be issued.
I guess underlying these questions for me is if the school is wrong in the way it reads the contract and they were entitled to a refund, is that not a breach of the contract to refuse to give it?
Well, At this point, at the appellate stage, that is not what we're talking about.
Okay.
I mean, we're talking about the findings of fact and whether rescission was an appropriate method. At some point, we can retry the whole case and retry all the facts and find conclusions of law where there's a breach the trial court didn't find. You know, there was a lot of evidence submitted. Perhaps we could piece together some claims that would succeed, but at this level, what we are working with is the record, and there was no finding of breach of contract. Therefore, we don't see any breach. To ask whether there could have been a breach of the contract for not refunding the deposit, I don't see that as a breach of this contract. The position seems very, very clear from Defendant Exhibit 1 that it's a non-refundable deposit, and we all know what a non-refundable deposit is. We've all made non-refundable deposits. The issue here was whether the alleged breach of contract, whether the plaintiff carried the burden of proof to sustain that remedy and to make the non-refundable deposit refundable. And just to make a final point, this contract is of great importance to the appellants. This is the contract that everyone signs. This is the contract that all the parents sign. They've signed that the school's been open for 25 years. This contract is a valid contract. Has not been breached, and we do not believe that, we understand that this particular case has cast a shadow over this agreement that determines the status of all the enrollees.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. All right. Mr. Hassett. We'll hear from the appellate.
May it please the court. I'm pleased to be here representing Mr. and Mrs. Bimmerly. I've been a friend of Mr. Bimmerly's for over 25 years, but I have to say that every time I pick up this file, it reminds me of a quip that my contracts professor, my first year in law school, late great Russell Weintraub, said, and that is, there are no such things as small cases, only small lawyers. So this is a small case in terms of monetary value. I think it's, I look at it as sort of a small claims case gone wild. We have been through three sets of lawyers on the defense side in this case, and here we are. We're at the heart of this case. It's an equitable proceeding. I believe that the trial court had the absolute discretion to fashion a remedy that he saw fit, and that's what he did. And I think it was the right thing because it would simply be unfair to allow the school in this situation to keep a full year's worth of tuition in its pocket without providing a single day's service in exchange for it.
Well, what cause of action for which this was a remedy did he find occurred?
Well, I have a fundamental difference of opinion with the appellants in this case, right, in that I do not believe that I have to prove a breach of a contract in order to be entitled to rescind a contract for the purposes that it was done in this case, which is to prevent an unjust enrichment.
So there's a cause of action for rescission?
Your Honor, it is a contract-based cause, but I do not believe I have to prove breach in order to get the remedy that we've sought.
What do you have to prove?
Your Honor, we have to prove that there is some reason why the court needs to set aside this contract in order to prevent unjust enrichment. The rescission case law all says the same thing. Mr. Regetz quoted part of it, but it all says that rescission is an equitable remedy that operates to set aside a contract that is legally valid but is marred by fraud, mistake, or for some other reason must be set aside to avoid unjust enrichment.
Did you plead unjust enrichment?
Your Honor, I believe we did in the way that we pled it. Is it artfully pled? No. I'll agree with that. Is it adequately pled, given the fact that there were no special exceptions filed? Yes. I believe that we asked the court to return to us the amount of the tuition paid under the terms of the agreement. And what the trial court found in this case is that we had two separate agreements. We had a 2008-2009 terms and conditions document that the appellants want to rely upon to say that it was a non-refundable deposit. And we formed a second contract whenever we paid for the 2011-2012 contract tuition year. And the reason why he found that is there's evidence in the record that that 2008-2009 school year was a pre-K year. And if you look at the terms and conditions document itself, at the very top it says that the Texas child care law is governing all child care facilities. So I think what came up at trial is this is a 2008-2009 agreement to enroll in pre-K or childcare facilities under Texas childcare law, but
was
not
the second contract in writing?
It was not. We indicated our desire to attend 2011-2012 and pay the full amount due at that time. And then immediately thereafter, in an exit interview at the end of the 2010-2011 school year, there became a dispute between the parties because Mr. Vesterman apparently indicated that my client's son had behavioral issues and he was concerned that they would have to continue to pull him out of class and he may not be educable under the Montessori doctrine. So at that point, my clients decided that it wasn't in their son's best interest to remain, and so they told them that they would not be enrolling their son. And what's important to note about that fact pattern right there is immediately upon the Bimmerleys telling the school, okay, we're not going to be here next year, the appellants in this case, the school, treated that situation as one in which they needed to return the money. They needed to refund the tuition payment. Time and time again, in evidence in this case, are emails from Mr. Vesterman to the Bimmerleys saying, I don't have the full amount of your refund yet, but I'll get it to you. I'll start making payments to you in October when tuition payments start coming in. We'll get it to you. And then we had to file this lawsuit. We filed it in a small claims court. I think that that rescission is available here. What we have, I believe, is a case that squarely fits in the case law quote that I just gave you, that a reason that must be set aside to avoid unjust enrichment. The full year's tuition was paid in advance. They were not required, the Bimmerleys were not required to do that. And there's testimony in the record from Mr. Vesterman that when the parents are given the option to pay monthly, they can pay month to month on their tuition at the Montessori school. And when they do that, if they were to withdraw, say October 15, they're going to withdraw. They've paid October up front. They don't get a refund for the remaining portion of October. But the school would never go and demand November, December, January, et cetera, throughout the end of the rest of the school year. And they would not be asked, the parents would not be asked to pay for the remainder of the year. But in this case, the full payment was made very quickly. The Bimmerleys decided not to go forward with enrollment for 2011-2012, and I believe he was never enrolled. And I can address your question, Justice Walker. We do not believe that he was ever enrolled for 2011-2012. The decision to pull him out and not enroll him was made in May before the August school year began. Mr. Vesterman even made promises that he would pay back the tuition with interest, and that's in the plaintiff's exhibits that were offered and accepted by the trial court. Justice McCoy, I think the 2011-2012 agreement that the trial court found was in essence, I pay you to educate my child, you educate my child. But that never happened because my clients never enrolled their son in the school because of the dispute. And the monthly tuition payments, while the terms and conditions agreement might say they're non-refundable, paragraph 8 in that agreement that Mr. Regetz just relied upon says, once application is made, registration and materials fees are not refundable. The tuition deposit is refundable only when a child is not accepted. And then paragraph 9 goes on with the language that talks about a May tuition advance. And I think there's evidence in the record, you'll see the testimony was that there's an advance, the first months of tuition is due in May in order to secure your spot for the August start of the next school year. So I believe that we could read that document to say that first month's advance is non-refundable, your registration fees, your materials fees, which was testimony there was $300 or so worth of materials and registration fees, those are non-refundable. But to say that the full amount of tuition for the following year is non-refundable, even under their terms and conditions document, I think is an incorrect reading of that document. Again, I believe that the trial court had discretion to fashion its remedy in equity in this case. And that's what it did. If you look at the entirety of the situation, it would just not be fair to allow the school to keep this entire year's worth of tuition and not provide any service for it. And that's what this case boils down to. We're asking the court to affirm that the trial court's decision. We didn't cross appeal. We don't want the rest of the money because these people just need this case to be done. And so we're asking the court to just go ahead and affirm it. Let this case be done. And if for some reason the court disagrees, I hope the court takes into account the equities of the situation and does not tax the costs of this appeal against my clients.
Thank you, counsel. All right, is there a rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor.
May it please the court. We absolutely fundamentally disagree that unjust enrichment is an independent grounds to award rescission as a remedy. Even on the situations where fraud and mistake and breach of contract are there, you still have to prove an inadequate remedy of law. That was never an issue in this case, was never proven in this case, was never pleaded in this case, and therefore the award of that rescission was inappropriate in the circumstances.
Well, wasn't that at the least tried by consent? I mean, Country Day didn't put on any evidence, correct?
That's correct.
And so we view all the facts in the light most favorable to what the trial court did, the finder of fact, correct?
Yes.
And we have findings of fact that would seem to support a rescission award.
Based upon what fundamental claim was proven. The trial court concluded no breach of contract. That was the only claim that was tried.
So you're going to stand on that you have to have a breach of contract to recover any type of rescission damages, that there's no such thing as equitable rescission.
Equitable rescission is a remedy that is based upon, as this court has said, as well as the Kennebrew court has said, you need to prove a cause of action, you need to prove a claim to entitle you to equitable remedy. It's not fair is not a reason to rescind a contract. Parties need to rely on contracts. Whether the Bimberleys decided to pay 1 month or 1 year, that was their decision. They made the decision for the 1 year. Previous years, they paid for 1 month. Why did they decide to pay for a year? Why is that tuition deposit 1 year? Because they got the 8% discount. If it had been a semester, it had been a 6% discount. This is the agreement that they made. This is the agreement they're asking the court to unwind.
Where is the 6% or the 8% discount in the contract that's attached to the back of your brief, the child care Montessori contract?
The actual tuitions, because tuition fees, and that's, I'm glad you asked that, because those tuition fees fluctuate. When a child comes into school, they sign the agreement one time, this particular agreement, right? They do not have to sign it again and again and again. Those are the binding terms and conditions of the contract.
But please answer my question. Is there a 6% or an 8% discount reflected in the written document that you contend is the contract?
Not in that written document, no, Your Honor.
Thank you.
So I think you started to answer a question that I was going to ask. How do you respond to his argument that the written contract we have here may have been applicable to an earlier year, but not to the year in question, the only contract of which was oral? Here's my check, you educate my child.
I'm glad you asked that, Justin McCoy, because that is the contract, as I mentioned. Whenever the parents first enter the child in the school, and the record on page 40 reflects that, they sign the agreement. They don't sign it for succeeding years. Had the Bimberleys brought their child here for the first year in 2011, they would have been entitled, they would have had to sign the terms and conditions. Because the child had already been enrolled there, those were the terms that governed. If you look at the contract itself, it is clearly at paragraph 11. It talks about preschool, kindergarten, first graders, elementary school. It says that the ideal Montessori program at paragraph 9 begins at around age 3, continues through age 6 and 7. There's no doubt that the trial court considered that contract to be applicable and contained the governing terms of the agreement. On the record at page 57, the trial court stated, based upon the reading of this contract, obviously that is the written contract that the entire case revolved around. He is reading the contract, not some contract that's out there that nobody knows what the terms and conditions are. Based upon the reading of this contract and how the situation would have led to different results had the Bimberleys opted for a different payment plan, that enforcing this contract to allow the full tuition to be retained by the defendant would have been inequitable. The trial court knew if he enforced that written contract, as he should have, that was going to be a non-refundable deposit, and the trial court simply did not want to do that. It thought that it had arrived with a more equitable outcome Fortunately, that outcome was not something that Country Day School was allowed to defend themselves against, and neither was there a cause of action or a claim proven to justify that cause of action.
Or remedy, actually, not
cause of action. I apologize, that remedy. And as a matter of law, unjust enrichment, we're not aware of any case where unjust enrichment, whatever that means, although we would agree that it was never pleaded or argued or tried, independently justifies rescission without an inadequate remedy at law. And the appellants would just ask that the case be reversed. This does probably need to be the final proceeding here. The case has been tried. The arguments have been made. The trial judge rendered its judgment. It was an error. We are asking this court to remedy that, to reverse the proceedings, and render in favor of the appellant and judgment in favor of the plaintiff and award trial and costs to the appellants.
All right. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you both. Good arguments, excellent briefs. It's hard to believe it started out in justice court and it's made its way here. Your case is submitted and you're excused. Thank you very much.